Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We've got another 2 hours left in this worldwide broadcast today as we blast out on the AM and FM dial from Illinois to Southern California to right here in Austin, Texas, to areas of Florida and upstate New York. We also are on the internet at Infowars.com and JonesReport.com and on Global Shortwave WWCR from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. And the rebroadcast is also on shortwave from 9 to midnight. And those frequencies are posted in the listener section of Infowars.com. Well, I really can't do justice to the bio of this individual, but he's from right here in Texas. He's Ray Martinez. He was an Austin police officer, and on the day 40 years ago today, here in Austin, Texas, when Charles Whitman, the former Marine sniper, climbed up and started blasting indiscriminately, killing 14 people, injuring 33, and of course killed two others, his mother and wife, before that. And Ray Martinez led the charge up there and fired the first shots and the final shot, taking out Mr. Whitman. And this is a story of courage. It's a story of also the citizens taking action and supporting the police and taking this individual down. So we're honored to have him in studio with us today. Very busy day. You're here in Austin speaking to different groups and being honored by the city. And Ranger Ray, thank you for coming into studio with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
You bet. We just got a few minutes before we break, but just tell us a little bit about yourself before we then come back and get into what happened 40 years ago here in Austin, Texas.
Well, all I can say is that I'm from a little town of Rotan, Texas, in West Texas, and I came to Austin in 1956 to attend the University of Texas. Of course, my career as a student took a downturn, joined the Army, and I returned back to Austin. And then from there, of course, I went job hunting. And I ended up in the Austin Police Department. And, of course, the rest is history.
What is it like to be back in Austin 40 years after, getting pretty close to the time all this happened?
Well, I just love Austin because it's always has been a part of me. And I'm always happy to come back to Austin because I still have family here. And, of course, today is the 40th, and right now, with this time 40 years ago, I was at home preparing something to eat when I saw the news bulletin come out about the incident that was occurring at the University of Texas.
What time did the shooting start, right around this time?
Well, it was going on right now because I understand it started about four or five minutes before 12. And I didn't get to hear it until a little after 12.
So we are literally at the very 40th anniversary, right at the minute this stuff was kicking off, right now.
That is correct. Right now I was at home.
I saw you looking at your watch, and I was looking at my notes, and I was going, wow, it started right now, and here you are in studio 40 years later talking about it.
That's correct.
That's amazing. So you're at home, you're fixing something to eat. Go ahead and start the story, and then we're going to break in just a moment.
Okay, well, I'm a creature of habit, and of course I listen to the news every time at high noon because I was on the 3 to 11 shift. I was not supposed to go to work until 3 that afternoon. So I was preparing my uniform so I could, because I always like to polish my boots, my brass, my everything. I wanted to look very professional. And I turned the television on to listen to the news, and I saw a note being handed to Joe Roddy, who was the anchor at the time. And he advised the public that there was a person, I don't remember if he said a sniper, but he said somebody, a man or a person, on the top of the University of Texas tower shooting at people, and there had been a number of people already injured and possibly some dead. After that, of course, I watched a little longer, and he was handing another note. And, of course, from what I heard, the situation was getting worse, that there were some dead people already.
All right, we're going to break, and when we come back, we will continue with the story, with the eyewitness, with the guy that took out the scumbag.
It's here.
After a year in production and traveling to distant lands, my new film, Terror Storm, is complete. Shocking declassified government documents prove that Western governments are orchestrating terror attacks against their own populations as a pretext to enslave them. Terror Storm proves that not only was 9/11 an inside job, but the attacks of 7/7 in London were carried out by British intelligence. Terror Storm chronicles the lies that took us to war in Iraq, a White House program to disseminate fake news, NSA spying, secret police torture, the latest 9/11 information, and much, much more. Terror Storm is the definitive guide to the history of government-sponsored terrorism. It's an anthology of government crimes. Terror Storm is a film that everyone who wants to be truly informed must see. Get your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139 or watch it right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here. You know Berkey water filters have been removing pathogenic bacteria for years. But what about those unhealthy chemicals and heavy metals in your water? The powerful black Berkey purification elements fit most gravity filters and dramatically increase their power to extract waterborne contaminants. Best of all, they filter much faster than ordinary gravity elements. This means it takes much less time to filter your water. Black Berkey elements not only remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites, but also remove trihalomethanes and volatile organic elements such as benzene, chloride, and chloroform, MTBE, radon 222, foul taste and obnoxious odors like sulfur, even nitrates, and unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum are extracted. Supercharge your gravity filter today and order a 2-pack of Black Berkey purification elements for only $96 or a 4-pack for only $175 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
By now, it is no surprise that the U.S. ranks 37th in the world in occurrence of chronic illness, according to the World Health Organization. Due to modern farming and food processing practices, our food supply has become nutrition deficient, deficient in nutrients essential to good health. It is time to take back your health. Everyone has the right to good health. Join the self-reliant families, entrepreneurs, and the company pioneering cutting-edge glyconutrient technology. The wellness revolution is projected to be a $1 trillion industry by 2010. We are looking for people who are serious about bettering their lives and the lives of the people they love. Better health is possible. To learn more, go to therighttogoodhealth.com. You have the right to decide what is attainable in your lifetime. You have the right to build a healthy lifestyle that you can share with your friends and family. You have the right to achieve self-reliance and financial independence. And you have the right to good health. Visit therighttogoodhealth.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Right now, 40 years ago, in downtown Austin, in the university area, the famous tower shooting was taking place, and Ray Martinez was just now seeing the second bulletin on the news about someone on the tower shooting. And, of course, many Austinites have heard the famous Neil Speltz report coming in about there's a sniper on the tower. So you weren't scheduled to go into work for about 2.5 hours at this point. You get the second bulletin, Ray. You're there, I guess, getting your uniform on right at that time. What did you do next?
Well, I didn't get my uniform on, but I felt that they might need some assistance, so I got on the telephone and called the police station. And the PBX operator hooked me up to Lieutenant Thomas. I asked Lieutenant Thomas if he needed some assistance, and he said, yes, we need assistance. I said, where do you want me to report, police station or the university area? He said, go to the university area, find an intersection, and work traffic and divert it away from the campus.
Where did you live at the time?
I lived in South Austin on Margaret Street, which is close to Barton Springs.
All right, so right over kind of in this area then.
That's correct.
So you, I would guess, got over there pretty quick then. Were you burning rubber?
No. I had a little 54 Chevrolet. I got dressed and I took off. Of course, I obeyed the traffic laws because I wasn't speeding, per se. I mean, hit the red lights and what have you. And if you're in a personal car, you're not going to be able to hurry.
Sure.
You got to go on with the traffic. And I was listening to Neil Spales on the radio, but back in those days, the radios were the tube type. And I had a default faulty tube, and so the voice would drift in and out. And so I wasn't getting a whole blow-by-blow account of what was happening. I was disturbed that when I got to Lamar in Barton Springs, I saw a detective lieutenant and a detective sergeant going south on Lamar.
Why were they going the wrong direction?
That I don't know. And then when I got to Riverside in Lamar, came up to a red light, and there was a forgery investigator, a sergeant, and at the traffic light, I rolled down my window and I asked him what was going on. He says, "Well, I think we've got a person up there on top of the tower shooting people, and I think one of the victims is Bobby Sides." That was a policeman. And I was pretty well disturbed because Bobby Sides was a friend of mine, and he had gotten shot back in 1964 by a burglar, but survived. So I did peel out from that location when the light turned green.
Because you were getting mad because you saw cops going the wrong direction, standing around. And
this sergeant was very nonchalant about it, you know, and so that kind of disturbed me. So I did kind of peel out as much as I could with the 54 Chevrolet. I went on to 19th in Lamar, took a right, went up the hill, and when I could see towards the campus or to the university area, I could see that all the intersections were already been manned by officers. Either most of them were from the motorcycle bunch. And so I said, well, I don't have any use. There's no intersection for me, so I parked my car behind St. Austin's Church. And once I got out of the car and started going through the church property towards the campus, I could hear all of the shooting, and I could hear sirens. And I knew it was very bad because sirens were the ambulances. Back in those days, the Austin Police Department did not have sirens in their cars. And so only the ambulances had sirens.
In fact, my good friend Mike Hansen, his dad was one of the ambulance drivers. Did you do you remember that? One of the ambulance drivers, he also got some awards because he was out dragging people into the ambulances and getting shot at.
I guess it must be Otto Hansen?
Yes.
Otto. Yeah, I knew Otto. And like I said, they all had, back in those days, we did not have EMS, per se. The funeral homes were the ones that operated the ambulances, and, of course, they did not have medical technicians. All you did was drive to the scene, pick up the person, throw him inside, and race it to the hospital. But, like I said, it was the sirens were all ambulances, and so I knew it was very seriously because of the volume of sirens. And the shooting, it was all high-powered rifles that I was hearing.
So we've got the ambulance folks doing their job, and then you see kind of, I'm not trying to bash here, but you brought it up, police kind of standing around nonchalant. How often were the reports? Were they regular, or did they go in spurts?
Well, it was sporadic at times, and sometimes they would kick off. It's just like if somebody fired, then somebody else would take a clue and open fire. The police, of course, like I said, they were working the intersection, which was about two blocks away from the campus because that was 19th. And people that were firing, I could not recognize because I would see people from behind trees, from inside buildings, from behind cars with rifles aiming up at the tower.
And you later learned that was mainly citizens.
Well, they were all citizens. I didn't recognize a single police officer because I knew them all.
What an interesting event. So the police are all doing traffic or going the other direction, but the citizens are all out blasting. Now, you talked Sunday on my Sunday radio program on KLBJ about how important that was because keeping him pinned down, that then kept him from killing a lot more people, didn't it?
That is correct. But let me say this in the defense of the police department, that the timing was very good as far as Charles Whitman's planning, I guess, if he planned it, because at 12 noon, most of your detectives were going to go out for lunch, or would be out for lunch.
Sure, he was running a military operation. He probably chose to do that.
And then, once they checked out, remember, they did not have radios like they have, or pagers, or any type of communications. They were completely isolated from the police department. So it was difficult for the police department to call those officers, wherever they were.
Oh, sure. I'm not bashing the police. I'm saying this is a great illustration of how important armed citizens are.
Yes. And but I understand that a lot of those officers, when they got wind of it, they went home and got their own rifles and came back, too, you know, and started shooting.
Good,
a lot of the detectives did. But the citizens were the main bulk of the people that were shooting.
So you saw folks all over shooting at
them. Yes, I did. I saw quite a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I have it in my book that I am still mad because a lot of those people never got any credit because they saved a lot of lives by keeping the sniper pinned down.
Now, your book is in stores because I have actually seen it in stores and didn't know what it was about. I should have got it at the time, but they call me Ranger Ray, and I can't wait to read this book.
Well, Barnes & Noble carries it here because it's a self-published book. But
I think that's where I saw it.
Normally, I have a website where people can get autographed copies.
Can folks get into the Texas Ranger website, texasranger.org? I just see a big write-up on it here.
No. You can get it at the former Texas Ranger...
Museum?
No, former Texas Ranger Foundation.org. That's in Kerrville.
We'll put a link to that up on Infowars.com right now. Also, I'm sure Amazon.com carries it.
I do not know.
I bet it does. They carry everything. Well, we'll talk more about the book. So you're there downtown. There's all these people behind cars, behind trees, shooting at the tower.
Well, I proceed to the South Mall, and I can see dead and wounded people out there, especially the pregnant woman.
Oh, my gosh.
Miss Wilson. And you could see her suffering because she was baking in that concrete. You know, it was so hot. So it must have been real bad for her, pregnant lady. But I was standing right there by Jeff Davis' statue, not realizing that the blood that I was looking at was where Billy Spreed, an officer, a friend of mine, had been killed.
Oh.
And it was a heck of a shot for him to put through there, you know, to hit Billy. So that's when I made up my mind that I was going to get into the tower.
How many yards was that, Sean? 400?
I really don't know how far, but it was a good distance.
But I read about that's horrible. I'm sorry. So you made up your mind to go into the tower then?
That is correct. And I felt that there would be an assault squad inside of the tower. So what I did, I ran fast, zigzagging, and ran by the dead, the wounded, you know, getting to the building.
Was he shooting at you at that time?
I do not know if he ever shot at me or if he even saw me.
But you heard the rifle going on.
I heard rifles going on. I heard a lot of shooting, but I don't know if he shot at me or not, or if he even saw me. I made it to the west side of the building and went inside because I had been at the UT Tower 10 years previously in 1956 when I first came to Austin as a student. My cousin and a friend took me up there, so I knew where the elevator was. But once I got inside, I ran across Jerry Day, who is a policeman, and I asked him what was going on, so he didn't have any more information except that that guy was up there shooting. I tried to use a telephone to call a police station, but when I dialed the first number, and it was a rotary dial back in those days, the lines were jammed. You couldn't get
everybody was calling everybody.
That's right. And I wanted them to see if they could bring some bank trucks, armored trucks, to get the wounded. Failing to do that, I saw a campus police officer. I took his handheld radio. They had handheld radios. And I used a couple of channels trying to contact this station, but I could not reach the station because those channels were not compatible.
Yes.
So I decided, well, I'm going to go into the tower and see what's happening up there. So I walked down that hallway, and before I got on the elevator, there was a young man there with a clipboard. And he asked me what my name was, and so I told him, and he wrote it down. And I don't know what his function was.
Talk about bureaucracy. I mean, they're just still operating like it's a...
No, but this was a young man. I don't know who he was or who... He might have been the devil himself. Because I haven't seen him to this day, you know. But, you know, he was doing something. At least somebody was doing something. So I got on the elevator and I pushed the button to the 27th floor. And as I was going up, I could see the little lights flickering as the floors passed by. I could still hear the rifle report. So I decided I better say a prayer. And I said an act of contrition. Since I'm a Catholic and if you are intimate death... you say an act of contrition, and supposedly, you know, our sins might be forgiven.
Stay right there, Ranger Ray Martinez. We'll finish up with your act of contrition on the other side of this quick break, right here on the GCN Radio Network.
Do you know the truth about breast cancer? Do you realize that the race for the cure is over? The best-kept secret in the world today is that now it is possible to kill cancer without personal suffering, mutilation, and poisoning of your entire system. Now, it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc.'s patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at a physician's office. Star War technology at its best. For more information, call 702-953-0267 or visit www.lasermedinc.com or call 702-953-0267.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold for your IRA? That's right. Gold has been available to be placed in IRAs since 1986. Yet still, the financial industry refuses to recognize the value of real hard assets for your retirement. The truth be told, gold and silver has outperformed paper investments like stocks, bonds, and CDs, yet no word about IRAs. Perhaps the financial institutions want to maintain control of your assets by keeping you in paper. If you'd like to take a look at gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low return on your paper investments. Call 800-686-2237. Make sure that you secure your future. Call 800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
David J. Smith for Newswatch Magazine. Have you ever wondered what former President George Herbert Walker Bush meant in 1990 by saying the Desert Storm War was a good chance to start the New World Order? The New World Order would cause us to lose our freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution and also our national sovereignty. Is this what Americans want, to be merged into a communist-style one-world government? We'd like to help you to understand why these things are happening by offering you an absolutely free one-year subscription to Newswatch Magazine. Just call our toll-free number, 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736. Call now. Operators are standing by to receive your order for a one-year free subscription to Newswatch Magazine.
All right, we're back live, and this is just an amazing interview going on 40 years ago in Austin right now. Went on for, what, like an hour and a half. Charles Whitman is up there right now at this time blasting people. He had, again, shot and killed 14, injured 33, and, of course, had killed his mother and wife hours before. Just, I want to try to talk a little bit about him later, and, you know, obviously, Ranger Ray only met him for about 5 seconds before he killed him, so I didn't get a chance to know him. Maybe he can give us some inside knowledge on people that he did talk to who did know him. Ray Martinez, again, who later became a Texas Ranger. I was reading through a synopsis of the book, Fighting Corruption in South Texas, Vote Rigging, Fighting the Kingpins Down There. I mean, you're a man after my own heart, sir. That's just absolutely amazing. Please continue. So you've gone into the tower and you say a prayer. Please go from there.
Well, it's the I had completed my prayer when the elevator got to the 27th floor. When the door opened, of course, I had my gun out because I didn't know what to expect, and I was hoping to see a lot of officers in there. But when the door opened, I was looking at a rifle and a pistol, and the pistol belonged to Jerry Day, a police officer, and the rifle was a person in civilian clothes, and I figured that he was from another police agency. So it was kind of like King's X, you know, and I came out of the...
You guys were pointed at each other.
Yeah. Came out of the elevator, and there was a little table, and at the little table was a telephone. And there was Dub Cowan, who was with DPS Intelligence. He was in civilian clothing. And he appeared to be trying to establish communications because he kept dialing the rotary phone. I immediately found out that this was it. There was no assault force... I was shocked because I had come all the way from my house, and here I was inside of the tower. So my military training took over, and, of course, you secure the ground that you're on, and then from there you proceed. So I said, okay, let's check the offices here so that we can make sure that the sniper is not here. Of course, I could hear shooting upstairs, and I could still hear it from the outside. And we started checking the offices, and I found one that was locked. And I couldn't open it, and I tried to force it, and somebody said from the inside, says, who is it? And I said, it's police. I said, just a minute. So I waited, and I could hear the furniture being unstacked from the door because they had barricaded themselves in there. Once the door, the furniture was removed, the door opened, and a stream of people came out. I remember two nuns because they still wore their habits, the black and white habits. And you should have seen the terror in the face of those people as they came out. We put them on the elevator, send them down, but there was one man that came out who was later identified as Mr. Kabor, and he had a pair of white women's shoes in his hand, and he said, my whole family has been killed. He says, give me the gun, I'll kill that SOB. And he tried to get my gun, I wrestled with him, restrain him, and he tried to get Jerry Day's gun.
You might have even let him help if he hadn't been hysterical grabbing your guns. Yeah.
That's right. But anyway, Jerry Day and I maneuvered him to the elevator, and Jerry restrained him while I pushed the button, and we sent him down because we couldn't have that distraction. So that left the civilian who I'm going to identify as Alan Crum at this time. And, of course, I did not know who he was at the time. And I ended up counting on the phone. So I started going up the steps and opened the door, and I started going up the metal stairs. And I could see bloody footprints. So Alan Crum came to me, and he says, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go up there and look for the person, you know. And so he said, you're not going by yourself. He says, I'll go with you. We'll do it service style. I said, come on. So we started up. I led the way going up the steps. And, of course, it was very scary because for many going up, we were very well exposed inside of there. He could have popped around from any corner and shot us, both of us. But at least I felt that by being two of us, one could get a shot off at him. So, anyway, went up the first flight of stairs and then took a right and then the next flight of stairs, and I could see the first the landing. And I was looking at a face of a young boy who was the little Gabor boy that had been killed.
Oh, my gosh.
His tongue was protruding out of his mouth, and his eyes were riveted on me. Of course, he was dead. I walked towards him, and it took an eternity. It felt like an eternity to get to him. When I got to him, of course, I peeked around the corner, and there was a dead woman who was his aunt. Another woman who was his mother, she was wounded, and she was face down, choking in her own blood. And at the end was another young man, the deceased boy's brother, who was an Air Force Academy cadet.
Oh, my gosh.
He was wounded, but he was conscious, and he pointed upward, and he says, he's out there.
Stay right there. When we get back, your confrontation with the psychopathic killer, Charles Whitman, the Marine Corps sniper up there killing people. on the other side of this quick break right here on the GCN Radio Network. The hero of that day, one of the great heroes of that day, Ray Martinez, is our guest. The Austin police officer who was the first to fire on the mad gunman. We'll be right back.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
So, Janice, where are you and Jim going on vacation this summer?
Definitely somewhere with a beach, though who knows if our feet will even touch the sand.
That reminds me, Janice, have you figured out how to talk to Jim about his problem?
No, I want to, but men can be so sensitive.
Well, it's only going to get worse. Remember, I was going through the same thing with Dan. Then I found Mycocide NS.
What's Mycocide NS?
Mycocide NS kills the germs that can cause fungal infections. It worked great for Dan. He had the worst-looking thick yellow toenails. Now his nails look clear and healthy.
Do I need a prescription?
No, you can get Mycocide NS antifungal treatment in the foot care aisle at any drugstore or major retailer.
And it really worked?
Yep, it worked on me, too. I had some white discolorations on my toe. I just applied Mycocide NS daily. I didn't even have to remove my nail polish.
Sounds easy. I can start planning our beach getaway.
Yeah, Mycocide definitely gave us the confidence to bare our feet again.
Pick up Mycocide NS at drugstores and major retailers. Look for a free bonus gift in each box.
Get the new Berkey battery adapter, an inexpensive yet long-term backup power supply for your Berkey Light LED system. The Berkey's LED lamps are unique because, incredibly, they have an average life of over 11 years of continuous use and are so bright they can be spotted for more than a mile in the dark, yet require very little energy. That's why this revolutionary new technology is a bit expensive. But it's worth every penny because the low-energy LEDs are able to provide light all night long for over 2 weeks on a single set of four AA alkaline batteries. That's right. Incredibly, your emergency light will operate every night for over 2 weeks for the price of four small AA batteries. Be prepared for unexpected emergencies and get the Berkey battery adapter, complete with on-off switch, for only $10 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
In December 2005, CNN had a special documentary about the inevitability of nuclear terrorism on American soil. When the mainstream media is reporting on such a perilous topic with such candor, it should be taken very seriously. Currently for sale by owner, the ultimate secure home is strategically located in the awesome mountains of southwest Colorado. This patented steel-reinforced concrete earth home was built to withstand any natural or man-made disaster you can name, whether that be a forest fire, an earthquake, or even a full-scale nuclear attack. The house is completely off-grid with solar electricity and an independent water supply. It even has a hidden fallout shelter with NBC air filtration. Its many self-sufficient and high-security features will amaze you. With nuclear World War III looming ever closer on the horizon, this custom survival home is turnkey, ready for a new owner. For more information, visit www.ultimatesecurehome.com. That's www.ultimatesecurehome.com.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Martinez is also the director of the former Texas Rangers Association, and he is the author of a great book that I'm going to definitely read as soon as I get a chance. They call me Ranger Ray, from the UT Tower Sniper to Corruption in South Texas. I got to have you on some other time via the telephone. You don't have to come in from New Braunfels, south of Austin, to talk about South Texas. But let's spend a few minutes on that before this hour ends, Officer Martinez, or Ranger Martinez. Please continue. Now, so the young boy is wounded, but he points and he says he's up there, he's out there, and you continue to move forward?
Well, we have to move him out of the way because the possibility that the sniper could shoot down the stairway and he would get hit as we were going up. So we moved him out. We turned his mother over to keep her from drowning in her own blood. And that's where I got the blood on my shirt because when I handled him and her.
In fact, that shirt is just right over there.
Yes, it is.
Later we'll pull that out.
And anyway, after we had moved him out of the way, I proceeded up at the last flight of stairs, which was blocked by a desk. And before we got to the desk, my companion, Alan Crum, looked at me and he said, "Are we playing for keeps?" And I looked at him and we had been through the dead and the wounded and the shooting was still going on. And I said, "You're damn right we are." He says, well, I guess you better deputize me. So I told him, consider yourself deputized. And that was the formality of it right there. So once he was deputized, he felt real good, it looked like. The expression on his face looked real good. So we proceeded on up, and we pushed that desk around to use it as a barrier as we secured the top floor. We found the receptionist behind the couch. She was dying, but we couldn't do anything for her. The next thing I had to do was, there was only one way to get out onto the observation deck, and that is on the south, almost on the southeast corner. There's a glass door. And Whitman had propped his dolly that he used to transport all of his equipment up there against the door and to keep it from being open. I pushed and I pushed and I pushed until I finally pushed the door open, and the dolly went over backwards, clanging as it went. Now, all of this time, you could really hear a lot of the shooting because he was really amplified up there on the very top. And I guess he didn't hear it because of all of the shooting.
Now, and again, that goes back to the citizens and police.
That's right.
Down there with the deer rifles shooting up there. And you described for me Sunday on the radio that there was limestone the tower's built out of just exploding fragments all around you.
Yes, there were quite fragments of the limestone and dust coming down. And, of course... I got out onto the observation deck, and I looked to the west, and I couldn't see anything, so I then went to the next corner, and I looked down on the east side all the way down to the northeast corner, and I couldn't see anything, so I got Alan Crum out, and I faced him in the direction of the west, southwest corner, and I told him, I said, I'm going to go around and look for him. If he comes around that corner, shoot him. Okay, so he said, okay. So I took off on the east side going towards us east northeast corner. Before I got to the northeast corner, I turned around, and Houston McCoy, another police officer, came out, and he had a shotgun. And that shotgun looked like a beautiful thing. And so anyway, I proceeded onto the corner, and McCoy was advancing towards me, behind me. When I got to the corner, I looked around, but I couldn't see all the way to the other corner because there's protrusions on or extensions where the clocks are built.
Yes.
So I had to really move out, and then, of course, you have all those big old lights back in those days that would light up the tower. So they were kind of an obstruction, too. So I had to really move out, and when I finally got out as far as I could see the sniper. He was sitting in the... northwest corner, aiming his rifle at the southeast corner, and he looked like he was drawing a bead on somebody. And I immediately thought that Mr. Crum had left his position and he was about to be shot. So I fired a fast round at him, hitting him somewhere on the left, and he sprung up to his feet like a cat and turned towards me. And he was trying to bring that M1 carbine down, but I kept advancing. It was kind of like a duck walk because I had to stay down so that I wouldn't get hit from below. And I advanced at him, firing my gun. McCoy was behind me. I hollered at McCoy to shoot the shotgun, which he did. At that time, my gun was empty, so I reached up and I took the shotgun from McCoy and fired one more blast at him, and then there he was, dead.
So you unloaded into him. How many of your six shots from your revolver hit him?
I do not know. I have never seen a copy of the autopsy. I don't know.
I've seen reports on the encyclopedia online. Supposedly he was just blown to bits.
Well, he had a few bullet holes, all right. I mean, he had a few holes in. But anyway, he was dead, and I started waving the shotgun, hollering it down below to stop shooting, but they couldn't hear. So I threw the shotgun down.
It's a huge tower. Yeah,
and I picked up my gun, put it in my holster. At that time, Houston was kneeling or kind of squatting in front of the body, and he was going through the pockets. I guess he was trying to find identification. And I told Houston, I'm getting the hell out of here. And that's when Alan Crum found the towel, and he started waving the towel to get the people to stop shooting. Later, I heard that people were complaining and saying, why did they have to kill him if he gave up? They didn't realize that he was Alan Crum that was waving the towel. But anyway, I got the hell out of there, and when I went down, they had already removed the dead and the wounded. I got to the bottom floor. I was met by Lieutenant Merle Wells and Lieutenant Morgan, Leonard Morgan. And they both each grabbed me by the arm because they thought I was wounded because of the blood on my shirt. And they was trying to put me in an ambulance, and I told them no. I said, there's other people that need the ambulance. I said, I'm all right. And at that time, Lieutenant Wells said, you need to go to the police station and write a report. So there was a detective sergeant there from forgery, Johnny Pope. Johnny said, I'll take you. And he started pushing, opening the crowd because there was a big crowd. And I followed John, and my legs couldn't support me because the adrenaline stopped pumping. And so anyway, he helped me, and he took me into the car, and we went to the police station. The police station, I was met by the chief and Hub Bechtel, who was a city council person, and they wanted to know what happened. So I kind of told them what had transpired as best as I could. I was having the dry heaves, and I didn't realize it, but reading on Texas Monthly a couple of days ago that a person that witnessed me come out of the tower said that I was covered with perspiration, which was an extremely hot day, so I feel that I was probably dehydrated to an extreme that I was possibly going to pass out, you know, because of a heat stroke probably.
Well, there's also just the incredible stress of the entire buildup, and that, you know, that archetypal image of marching up the stairs of the tower, going up to face this evil creature, and then the stress of it, and then also the relief, of course, of being successful in doing that. In hindsight, I mean, what's it like for you to be here, being honored in the city of Austin today, downtown? What's it like for you to be here 40 years later? In fact, I mean, right now, I guess you would be going back 40 years ago. You were in your car on your way down there, or do you think you'd already gotten down to that vicinity by now? What time did you get there?
Well, right now, I'd probably be getting close to the tower. I mean, I'd be somewhere right there, not exactly can pinpoint it, but I'd be somewhere in the general vicinity of the South Mall.
What time did you? How long did it take from the time you got to the South Mall to the time you? What time did you kill him?
Well, the it was over about 1:30, and so I can't say specifically where I was at what time, but pretty sure I was working my way up to the tower at the time. Because you got to remember that when Alan Crum and I went up those last two flight of stairs, it was slow because we had to use a lot of caution. We just didn't rush in there. We had to use caution, move very cautiously.
What do we know about Charles Whitman? A lot has been written, a lot has been said, from talking to other officers, from talking to the police here locally, from talking to the FBI who came in. What was going on with this individual? What was the motivation? Some say it was a brain tumor. You seem to believe that might not be it. Ranger Ray, tell us what you think really went on there.
Well, I assume it was possibly mental. For one thing, he had allegedly he had some swing moods, and he complained of severe headaches. He had family problems with his parent, of his father. I believe that he was on amphetamines, and also too, there's a debate about the tumor. You know, the size of the tumor. I've talked to a doctor that was Dr. Pepe, who was the emergency room doctor at the time. He said what he saw, he thought he was the size of a peanut. You know, the pathology said he was the size of a pecan. And, of course, there was a debate as to how it affected the brain. Dr. Pepe told me that he didn't think much of the autopsy because there was a lot of questions about Dr. Chouinard. He supposedly came from Hungary, and they could not question his documents because at the time Hungary was behind the Iron Curtain, so they had a lot of doubts about him. So there's a debate, now, not from me because I'm not a medical professional, but from some of the medical officers.
Things like this really hadn't happened in the United States or anywhere else for that matter. Mad gunmen, which later became a more common unfortunate phenomenon. I mean, what was this like in 1966 in a little sleepy college town like Austin, Texas? What was the effect on the public?
Well, the effect of the public was shocked because, and also in the police department, because, you know, the innocence, the day of innocence was gone because Nowadays, people will question, well, why didn't they stop him when he came over there with that dolly full of equipment, you know, his guns and all of that? Well, back in those days, of course, he had the guns wrapped up in blankets. Nowadays, of course, he would have been challenged, but back in those days, we were a very trusting nation, and we wouldn't question him, so that's why he took advantage of the innocence of the people and went on up there to the tower.
They've reopened the tower now. They've put some precautions in. What did you think about that decision?
Well, I'm glad that they did. I'm glad that they reopened it because I felt as long as the tower was closed that Charles Whitman had won. And I'm glad to see that it's open and they are conducting tours. Of course, it's limited, but still it's open. And I'm glad that people, the citizens of the state of Texas, can get up there and see the views of from their beautiful tower.
Now you can see the mountains off to the west and the hills, and then you can see the plains off and the whole skyline from there. Shifting gears, I want to get back a little bit into this, but you're here in Austin today. What are you here in Austin for today?
Well, primarily just for this, and I have a speaking engagement this evening in Lago Vista, so I'm not here to reminisce about it. I mean, I'm not going to go to the tower. I'm not going to go anywhere else other than be here.
Have you been back to the tower since then, 40 years ago? I mean, you've been back up in it?
Oh, yes. I've been for just about every anniversary, the 5th anniversary, the 0 anniversary, 10th, 15th, 20th anniversary. You know, there's the news media is interested in it, and I get called. I go up there with them, and we do a piece. And it's because it is history. And there's a lot of people, especially a person that was born 40 years ago, are not aware of it. Now they're 40 years old, and they said, hey, I wasn't even born. So it is a historical incident that happened, and so people like to know about it.
Well, I think about it quite often when I look at it, especially when it's all lit up, burnt orange at night. The tower kind of looks evil. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm not saying it's evil itself. I just think about that. Tell us now. Spend a few minutes about after that happened, what you did, how you got into the Texas Rangers, some of the things you did in South Texas, rooting out corruption.
Well, after this incident happened, of course, I stayed 2 more years in the Austin Police Department. I was promoted to sergeant in November, and I was already on the list to be promoted. I was on the eligibility list, so an opening came up in November, and I was promoted to sergeant investigator. I stayed for another 2 years, and started looking for better, greener pastures because I had a family to feed, and at that time, the Austin Police Department pay was kind of very low. The retirement system was terrible. But nowadays, they have one of the best pays in the state and a good retirement system. But anyway, I left and I went into private business, a partnership with a cafe there on the Picnic on Guadalupe Street. And I hadn't been in that business for about 2 weeks, and I started missing law enforcement. So before the year was up, I had applied, and I went with the Department of Public Safety as a narcotic agent stationed in Houston. That was the beginning of the Department of Public Safety was just hiring people because the drug problem was beginning to escalate. As a matter of fact, in 1966, when this incident happened, the Austin Police Department, as I have the annual report for Austin 1966 here, there was only 1.5 pounds of marijuana confiscated in the whole city of Austin.
Wow.
And so you can see that by 69, the problem had escalated.
Exponential.
Very much so. And that's why I got into the ground floor of the state narcotic division.
How did you get into the Texas Rangers, one of the most elite policing groups in the country?
Well, after being on the state narcotics for a couple of years, I got an personal invitation letter, a letter from Captain Clint Peoples, who was the Ranger, senior Ranger captain, inviting me to compete for the Ranger exam. And to me and to everybody else, whenever the senior Ranger captain sends you a letter of invitation, that means that you're going to make it. However, what happened was I was stationed in Houston at the time. I went to have coffee with Captain Eddie Oliver, who was the Ranger captain commanding Company A there in Houston. And we were shooting the breeze, and he said, the DPS commission wants to have another Hispanic Ranger. And that turned me off because I wasn't going to be a token. I wanted to make it on my own. So I wrote a nice letter to Captain Peoples declining to take the test. The following year, the advertisements about ranger testing came through normal channels, and that's when I applied. I took the test. I made the interview board. I ended up on the eligibility list, but not high enough to make it. The following year, again, I competed, and this time I made it. So I felt like I earned my badge, and my badge was not given to me.
And so that's shooting and criminology. It's a pretty hard test, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. And so anyway, I'm...
Well, that's another incredible thing. So I mean, obviously, you'd make a great ranger, what you did at the tower, your military skills, all of it. You've done a good job, in the DPS. So they wanted you, but because there was some politicking above that, you wanted to make it totally on your own merit, and you did.
That's what I wanted. I wanted to earn the medal, the badge, not have it handed to me. And when I got it in 73, I was very proud. I was sent to Laredo. And Laredo is a different country, so to speak, a different world. And I really enjoyed it. The people were great, but it wasn't very long before the following year that I was involved in the Carrasco episode.
Stay there. You fought corruption big time, some of the kingpins down there. Final segment coming up with our guest, and I want to also, for the TV viewers, show them the shirt from that fateful day. Stay with us.
Here, after a year in production and traveling to distant lands, my new film, Terror Storm, is complete. Shocking declassified government documents prove that Western governments are orchestrating terror attacks against their own populations as a pretext to enslave them. Terror Storm proves that not only was 9/11 an inside job, but the attacks of 7/7 in London were carried out by British intelligence. Terror Storm chronicles the lies that took us to war in Iraq, a White House program to disseminate fake news, NSA spying, secret police torture, the latest 9/11 information, and much, much more. Terror Storm is the definitive guide to the history of government-sponsored terrorism. It's an anthology of government crimes. Terror Storm is a film that everyone who wants to be truly informed must see. Get your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139 or watch it right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
You've asked for them, and now they're here. Hello, folks. Alex Jones introducing you to the new Berkey PF2 fluoride and arsenic reduction elements for exclusive use with the Berkey Lights Black Berkey Purification Elements. The Berkey's PF2 simply screw onto the stem of the Black Berkey Purification Element. When used, water flow through the purification elements where pathogenic bacteria, harmful chemicals, radon-222, heavy metals, nitrates, foul taste and odors are separated from the water. The water then flows through the PF2 elements where fluoride, arsenic, and other residual heavy metal ions are separated. Your purified water is now ready. If you have fluoride or arsenic in your water, you need the Berkey PF2 post filter elements. Get a set of two for only $49 or get two sets for only $89 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll free. 888-803-4438.
Herbal Healer Academy is a global supplier of the finest natural medicine that you may need in these troubled times. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECAC, colloidal silver 500 parts per million, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for contrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning, to name a few. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. For a limited time, you can sign up on the website and receive our 104-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com. Check out our online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. We have been working hard since 1988 to save the remnant. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Ranger Ray Martinez is our guest. Final segment with him. Boy, this hour went by incredibly fast. You've actually got the shirt there, and we're going to show that to the TV viewers. If you could hold that up for the camera, Ranger. That's just amazing. There is the actual shirt that you were wearing that day. That is history. Did you hear that one of the bullets that was on Whitman went for over $200,000? Did you hear about that, Ranger?
Yes, I did.
We were just talking about during the break, you could, you're trying to set up some type of, a ranger organization or historical organization. And I tell you, that shirt might just be able to fund doing that.
Sure would be great if I could utilize it for that purpose.
Well, who knows? A lot of folks are listening to this radio show. How would an organization or group get a hold of you? Do you have an email address or a website people can get through you? Get to you through? Perhaps the Texas Ranger website has a whole section on you, thetexasranger.org, or how could they do that?
They can get with my email, or I have a website, and it is RangerRay.net.
RangerRay.net. We'll get a link to that up on my website, InfoWars.com. Just in a nutshell, you've had quite a career. I mean, the tower is one small part of it. You really spearheaded and rooted out a bunch of corruption in South Texas, didn't you?
Well, it was a team. It was a team effort. It was the Attorney General's office and other rangers and I that...
Boss hog types.
...that went into Duval County, which was where Lyndon Johnson got his start. In 1948, with a landslide victory, and that's
ballot box
13, and we got to in there's the task force, and we investigated, and I was one of them. Well, another ranger, Rudy Rodriguez from San Antonio, and I, we were the ones who were the mainstays that stayed there. But of course, we had the Attorney General's office people plus some of their investigators that assist us, and Gene Powell, who was a ranger station in Bishop. We all got involved into the corruption. By the time we got through, we had indicted 118, anywhere from school superintendents to county judges, county commissioners, you name them, we got them.
So a lot of them had their snout in the trough. What kind of stuff was going on?
Well, they were misdirecting county funds, city funds, school funds, water district funds. They were all using it for their own benefit, and the poor people there are very poor. But their taxes were very high, and they were just stealing them right and left.
Boy, I bet the Texas Rangers could have a lot of work to do today. There's lots of that going on now, Ranger Ray.
Well, there's just very few Rangers. But there's corruption everywhere. But my book says South Texas because that's where I worked. Now, I know there's some in East Texas, North Texas, West Texas, wherever.
But South Texas, that area was legendary.
Yes, it is. I always bring up a little story about when I was stationed in Laredo, because I did the street department investigation in Laredo, where we indicted 26 people, city employees, because they were diverting money from the street funds to their own pockets. So, but anyway, there was a little article in one of the newspapers there in Laredo that has so many years ago in history. And this one was about so many years ago there in Webb County or Laredo. And it said, X number of years ago, the county judge was running for re-election, and he had a challenger, a young man. The young man got up and talked to the crowd and said, ladies and gentlemen of Webb County, the judge here has had a road, a county road, paved all the way from the Zapata Highway to the front of his ranch, and he had the audacity to not just pave it to the front of his ranch, but he also had it paved all the way down to his house.
Oh, boy.
And so the people cheered, and the young man sat down, and the old judge got up there and says, ladies and gentlemen of Webb County, what the young man has told you is the
stay
truth.
Stay there. One...
This broadcast is available on MP3 CD format at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.